You're listening to Triple Radio on the Fat Gatsby Network.
Shabbat boom! We're here. It's a podcast.
A classic phrase.
It's shabbat boom. Yep, that's it.
That was a different one. Our second classic.
All right, well, hey everyone, welcome here, to Triple Radio.
Yeah,
yeah. Yes.
Our listeners welcome like to things Radio, to say the same. They like us to always hear that classic catchphrase. Weiss, what was it? How does it go?
I believe there was a shibba 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 boom. I think it kept adding on to it. Yeah,
classic.
It's kind of it constructs. It just keeps going. Yeah.
So this is welcome to Triple Radio, the first Triple Radio of 2025.
Ooh.
That's Weiss. Yeah, everything's. Everything's fucking great.
Yeah. Yeah. It's our first show of 2025. So we're calling this Project 2025. And what that means for you is that there's going to be all sorts of great new initiatives here on our podcast that you're just going to love. I'm sorry.
Yeah, we're not sure how far we'll are you doing a bit?
I'm sorry. I'm told that name's already taken. And we, yeah. That's not.
Okay, so that what? Was a bit. Yes.
Really?
Nope. Yeah. Like is this a bit? No, it's Jan over there.
Oh. Folks, I'm sorry. We're going to abandon the name Project 2025 for the podcast going forward. I'm being told that that's associated with something that's not good, apparently.
I hope that's your smallest child that's over there that's telling you, that's feeding you this.
Yes. Yeah, that's my...
Yes.
The bit must really be reading then if I've convinced that there's actually a person there.
I mean, at first it was like, oh, did someone just poke their head down the stairs or something? But then I was on to you after that.
True. Yeah, yeah.
No, I mean, that was kind of, yeah.
I'm a jokester. Yeah, you know, we joke around here.
It's into the fun, so.
Yeah, so yeah, it's been an exhausting year this past week.
Yeah.
Yes. Hey, you got to escape it for a couple days.
Yeah,
I got to escape it for about 20 hours. I got to escape it.
Yeah, 20 hours.
I'm getting closer to it.
It was wild. I don't know. I just put my head in the sand. It was also weird because, like, so last week, you know, obviously we're referring to the inauguration of the fucking hellscape that we live in now here in the United States of America, which, you know, it kind of affects the rest of the world.
Kind of.
In various ways. Yeah, sort of. Yeah, especially if you're another country. Yeah, on your VPN there, Weiss, you can look up a map on Google and see the Gulf of America.
Yeah.
Everywhere you look, it's the Gulf of America now.
I mean, the Gulf of Freedom Fries is like the least of my problems.
Absolutely. It's just stupid.
Yeah. I know. It's just the funniest example at this point.
Yeah.
But yes.
It's bad.
Transition to MAGFest?
Yeah, the world is bad, but you got to spend glorious 20 hours in the island.
Well, I was going to say, right after inauguration, which was last Monday, like, I also had two snow days in a row.
Oh.
So, yeah, it was a lot of just kind of being at home and not being in routine and then being in routine and then being very, very off routine. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Right. So, yeah, it's you're desperately trying to transition me to, I did go to MAGFest for a whirlwind.
Jokes out of this, whatever, but.
A whirlwind speed run of MAGFest this year as it worked out that I could only make it there for, well... Yeah, in some ways I only chose to be there for a day. In other ways, it only made sense because I had limited resources for MAGFest and not necessarily financially, but in terms of at the MAGFest, I didn't have a room or a guest badge, which are things I'm not used to. Sorry, I've been pampered. This is the very first year in MAGFest history that I was walking around wearing an attendee badge.
The like first a civvy.
I know. I didn't pay for it though, so there's still that.
There's still
oh good.
There's still that.
You but, still punched a child and stole it.
Yes. It's still weird. And yeah, the first MAGFest where I was showing up late pretty much.
Yeah.
It's just all kind of centered around the fact that Name That Tune ended up getting scheduled for very late on Saturday, 12:30. So late on Saturday that it was in fact Sunday. It was 12:30 a.m., which is a bummer of a time. There are reasons behind it that are, you know, it's the way things go sometimes, the way things shake out, where promises are made to other panels in your same group that cannot be like reversed because so many people are planning around coming up Friday night. But
however, though,
it was good. It was good. But yeah, so I landed at like 1:30 Saturday afternoon, got to MAGFest slightly after 2:00. You know, it was just like right to it. Like, you know, met our friend Kevin Flanagan, who we've been friends with since MAGFest 2, and was my roommate for the weekend.
Yeah,
it would have been more fun if Bobby didn't have to go home suddenly. Talk about someone who had a worse MAGFest than me. Take the smile off my face because it's really sad. I wasn't the only one who lost a pet in the last 2 weeks.
I didn't post anything about that.
Yeah, in live. So which was my fear, honestly, when I could visibly see my dog's health deteriorating, like kind of around Christmas time. Oh God, am I gonna go to MAGFest and then have to leave because the dog is on its last legs? But fortunately, she reached her last legs a couple weeks before MAGFest, thanks Tess. Yeah, rest in peace. Currently not farting up this room as she has been for every podcast that we've done in here. Oh, my dog outside yelling at me. Got up to the room, changed. Yeah, just went downstairs, got my badge, and just immediately started like sweeping the marketplace because I only got so much time. Sweeping the marketplace. Was invited out to dinner at that freaking barbecue, the Brazilian barbecue place.
Great.
The endless meat steaks.
Yeah.
Extra fortunately, I didn't have to pay for it. Thanks, Wooden Christie. very much for that delicious and fancy dinner that filled me with meat for the rest of the night. I sacrificed seeing Los Veros, which is One Up's William Ray's band that he just made. Of course, in MAGFest tradition, I sacrifice seeing a band that I would have liked to see to have dinner because you just have to do that. It's just part of it. Got back, saw a bit of Master Boot Record, which is like a chiptune metal band from Europe, I want to say. Some of that. I caught the entirety of Premium Vintage, which is an entirely Hades focused band. Just straight to it, just playing the Hades soundtrack, and that's just fantastic.
I thought you said Hades, and I'm like,
Hades. Me too.
Hades. Like the video game. Hades.
Premium Vintage. A name.
The songs from Hades, but in the style of songs from the 80s.
Doing that, like the old Transformers cassettes that went with. That would be so sick. Anyways.
Which way I had to retreat to the room because my phone was dying. But, you know, I just chilled up there, had to finish some stuff for Name That Tune, watched the next band, which was Martial Art on the TV.
All right.
Then Bit Brigade was playing.
Heard of that one.
I'm guessing was the biggest show of the weekend. The concert hall was at capacity. There was a line of people down the hall waiting to possibly be able to get in.
I did see, I don't know if I think it was Matthew that posted the cybernetic spree where they were having Dead Optimus Prime crowd surf on the slab. That was beautiful.
They were crowd surfing Dead Optimus Prime. Fortunately, I didn't feel the need to. That set is tremendous. Dave and I saw it. But it was like, okay, I don't need to prioritize this right now. I didn't.
Did you have before you had to go to Name That Tune?
They went on at 10 something, and I think they were done by 11 something.
All right.
So, like, And Name That Tune was at midnight 30. So there would have been time for me to see it, conceivably. No, not at all. It was just a thing. It allowed me to go and, you know, chat with our friend Ruby, who runs the marketplace
for a bit.
And toddle around a little bit more. But yeah, you know, midnight, we were setting up for Name That Tune, still had hundreds of people show up at 12:30 a.m. To participate and throw names in the bag. Yeah, had a good game. I was very tired by the end of it, it went a little after 2:30 because we had a nail biter for the final where it was deadlocked in a tie, and there was a back and forth where they couldn't quite name a tune to finish it out. It got very tense.
Yeah. You spoil it now, or are you saving it till the video?
Of what? Who won, or?
Or what the song was. I don't care who won. I don't know them.
The winning song was from Shovel Knight. Which is, I feel like, funny. We were in this, like, you know, because we'd exceeded the, we picked 9 songs for the final, like standard, which is weird because we should definitely pick way more because with the kind of the rules, it usually goes a few songs over. Note to self for next year. Pick more final songs. But so, yeah, we were well into like our tiebreaker pool, which we just have like a big pool of songs for when we need tiebreakers. So I don't know exactly what's coming when. And because it's such, you know, I don't want to like be wrong and celebrate before, you know, it's appropriate. And so like I'm checking every one of them. And like I want to say that Xanderlord, now 3-time champion Xanderlord, guessed it on a steal. And like I said to Zerum, like, was that Shovel Knight? And he's like not paying attention to me. And I'm like, Zerum, what is that Shovel Knight? Oh, yeah. You know, like, this delayed gratification of it. It's like, yes, it was. So, yeah, that was fun and exciting. And of course, tons of people came out that have come out for years and years and years.
Oh,
many familiar faces. It was a lot of fun.
It
was a blast.
I saw you post that people were monk chanting right along with the Metaphor Refantasio battle theme.
Yes.
Other songs that you were either surprised that a lot of people knew, people seemed to recognize instantly that you didn't think they would, or vice versa?
Nothing comes to mind right now. I probably made it back up to the room at like 3 o'clock a.m.
Yeah.
And I am not a boy who stays up very late.
You were texting me by 9 the next morning to show off the pinball machines.
Yes. Yeah. So like I probably fell asleep by like 4, but because I am programmed to do so, I started to pop awake at 6:15. I fell back asleep for another hour, but then it was like 7:30 and I was like, time to get up. And yeah, when it's early morning at MAGFest, the place you go is to the arcade because there is lots of room on the machines that have not had room on them all weekend. So yeah, I played a ton of fucking pinball. I just jumped on because they had like so many of the newer Stern machines down there. So I'm trying to think what I got on. I, of course, played a round of Godzilla because that machine rules.
Of course.
It was a Jaws machine, Jurassic Park. I don't remember all of them, but yeah, I played many games of pinball.
Excellent.
Toddled over to the rhythm game section.
Toddling at MAGFest. You're barely able to stand
I was
there.
Very tired. I did so many steps. Yeah, went over to the rhythm game section, which I usually never touch because it's always packed. Yeah. But yeah, got to play one of those Japanese rhythm games with like funky controls. This one was like a washing machine, like a wall mounted washing machine.
What?
And the controls are like, it was like putting your hands around like the outside of the rim.
And the
screen was in the middle. You might have seen this. I looked up the name of it and then I forgot to like actually remember what it was for this, but
one of our local arcades actually has one of those that was very fun.
Yeah, I think there's a couple machines like that now, but yeah, it's like the notes come at you like around the entire circle of the screen. You have to have your hands down and move them around and like, you know, tippy tap like that. It was cool. It was fun.
Yeah.
You know, they had one of those big like sit down 3-screen train simulators.
Ooh, that's cool.
Yeah, so, one of those was there. I did not play that.
Okay.
I forgot to mention, yeah, also at some point, you know, Saturday night, when I had a moment, I like ran around the indie section and just grabbed business cards and like things of every game I thought looked interesting.
Excellent.
So I will pull those out of my bag and probably look through those and look for some demos in the next month to talk about on the next episode.
Great.
But cool. Yeah,
I believe I saw the developer of that, that Castlevania Simon's Quest tribute game, Transylvania Quest of, I forget, it's got a silly name, but he had a hell of a display. Please don't sue. but he had like a life-size skeleton in a coffin last year. Like he had a massive setup last year. You didn't happen to notice him or that area. Did you see that game?
I did notice it. I don't think it was as elaborate.
Okay.
Yeah, I've been following that on, well, now Blue Sky, but Twitter for like forever. Hang on,
give me 1 second.
Yep. Are we pausing?
I'm going to try to guess the name.
Yeah.
It is the Transylvania Adventure of Simon Quest. I think it's something like that.
I didn't think it was like four names. I thought it was just the two, but I'm trying to pull it up while I'm vamping here. But internet's being slow.
Well, I feel like it's got a name and then colon, the Transylvania Adventure of Simon Quest. Like that's like the subtitle. But I can't. I know that
I follow too many people with Transylvania, I think, is probably. Well,
Programancer is what he goes by on
Programancer. Yes.
All right. So let's see. I'm just going to read them off because I haven't got a chance to actually play any of them. But hey, at the very least, you get a shout out on the podcast for me raiding your booth quickly. Rightfully Bury Arms, which I think is a thing with bears and guns. And I think it's like kind of an arena shooter deal. I don't remember. I don't even know what any of these are yet. Breeze in the Clouds. Something to look up. Mm-hmm. Become a force of nature in a stylish combo fueled 2D action adventure.
Love it.
I think Standing Cat is the studio. Yeah, Standing Cat's the studio. I don't remember what the game is. It's on
Dave, it is a Transylvania Adventure of Simon Quest.
The Transylvania Adventure of Simon Quest. Okay.
Yes.
Yes.
Zeph. Yeah, Zeph, which is a new 16-bit Sega Genesis Mega Drive shooter.
Great.
Scrolling, 2D shooter there.
Can't have enough of those. Only competing against Yuzo Kushiro these days.
Incretion is what it's called.
Incretion.
Don't know what it is. Incretion. Advent of the Reaper, a retro-inspired fantasy tactics RPG. I can't quite read what the game is. Mind Wave, maybe? Kickstarter live now. Oh, yeah, Mind Wave. There it is. Yeah. Hollowhammer.com/Mind Wave. Apparently live on Kickstarter right now.
Very nice.
Fine Work. www.fine.work. Don't know what that is, but there you go.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. 1,000 Deaths.
Is that a Playdate game? No.
No, I don't think so. Globlins. I remember this one looked cool. Don't remember what it is now, though, but it's like Other, Her Loving Embrace, and Taro the Sneaky Ninja. And actually, there was two more I took pictures of on my phone because I couldn't find cards. Yeah, there was a lot of neat stuff there, for sure.
It's always a highlight of MAGFest for me is checking out.
I raided the arcade, did a little bit more shopping. You know, I grabbed a couple, you know, an indie board game or card game for
the kid.
And like another like D&D based card game for him and some artwork for Lauren and like a boba tea inspired candle that the girl was selling like hotcakes out of that.
I mean, that sounds good.
I got a couple CDs.
Like a cup of boba? Is that?
Yeah, it's got like little black little balls at the bottom of it.
Little black and, balls.
Yeah, she seemed like she was doing great. I got myself a new Zelda hat and a couple CDs to rip and then put in a bin in the basement. But hey, that's fine. And then I pretty much did a little more chatting, walking around, then left. Had my flight was scheduled for 1 o'clock, so I had to couldn't tarry around too long. Had
an
awkward conversation on the way to the airport about immigration with the Uber driver.
Oh, cool.
Thanks for that. Yeah. And so at the, this was a bonus fun, you know, at the airport, I'm looking for some food and I'm like, oh yeah, this, and I've been in this section of the terminal. Like this is where I've flown out of the last three times I've gone to DC. Yeah. So I'm weirdly familiar with a part of an airport now. Like I have never been before in my life. But yeah, there's like this pizza place there and like, oh, they got some good breakfast options that aren't, that are suspiciously not that expensive for an airport. And then I'm like trying to order them and I'm like, oh, it's after you stop serving breakfast. I guess I'm just having a pepperoni pizza for breakfast, whatever.
As I was
scanning the area for a place to sit and eat, I noticed that Dan and Chris from Arm Cannon were already there because, of course, they were taking the same flight back to Buffalo with me.
Course.
So I got I sat down with them and then almost as quickly, like Maze Dude appeared. Yeah, because he was flying back to Yeah, he
still alive. Good.
Yep, still alive. He comes to MAGFest.
Oh, okay. I mean,
yeah.
When was the last time I did? So
that's true. That's fair. Yeah. So he was flying back to Syracuse, and he left much sooner. So he was only talking with us for like 15 minutes. But then I was like, you know, just hanging out with Arm Cannon for while we waited, which was good because the plane got delayed by like 45 minutes.
Oh wow.
Jeez.
Oh, that's a little extra MAGFest time then extended.
Because, you know, usually it's like, I mean, you know, we'd have the car ride back, but, you know, there's kind of a lonely feeling after you leave the Gaylord, like you are leaving the MAGFest behind.
Yeah.
But because I like bumped into them there and it was kind of like, oh, here's like a little bit of like bonus MAGFest to like, hang out with people I don't usually get to see, even though we live in the same city and just chat a little more and then, you know, got off the plane together and Dan getting his guitar and then immediately inspecting it to make sure it didn't get fucked up in the store in the, you know, the luggage bin. But and that flight back kind of sucked. I don't know. Both. Oh. I'm just too big for airplanes, generally speaking. It's such a fast flight. It's less than an hour.
Yeah.
You know?
Wow.
Like when we left Buffalo, it was like straight out to the runway, up in the air. You know, no waiting, no, because the weather was nice and not snowing like crazy, so we just got to take right off. Like it was, yeah, it was that part was great, that it was very quick. But yeah, I had a good I'm still processing it all. It happened very fast.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, it's a lot to take in all at once.
Yeah, but it you know, somehow I did, you know, other than I still got to catch shows. I still got to walk around the dealer room. I still got to like sweep through the indie stuff. Still got to play arcade games. I checked most of the boxes that I do during an average MAGFest, other than like getting to spend a lot of time hanging out with people.
Yeah.
Right.
That was all I didn't get to really do. And there really wasn't a lot of people that I knew there, but
Yeah. I mean that list grows smaller and smaller every year of people that I'm really looking forward to seeing, just because there's fewer people there. Fewer of our people there, I should say.
Yes.
You know,
more of the rest of the people.
Yeah. I think, you know, ideally 20 hours at MAGFest is not enough time, but if I'm being real honest, I've been thinking now that, you know, a shorter time at MAGFest might not be a bad thing. A shorter, sweeter, more intense time.
Yeah, I feel like if I had flown in like Friday and left Sunday morning, that probably would have been just about perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I was bummed I missed the, T. Lopez show that was late Friday night. I was, of course, bummed that I missed freaking Lotus Juice, which was very late Thursday night.
Correct me if I'm wrong, and I only say this just to make sure that for accuracy. I believe T has had to correct people online. I believe his last name is pronounced Lopes.
Okay, Lopes. Excuse me.
Because I otherwise I also would. I'm pretty sure this is sticking in my head because I thought it was Lopez too. And I was surprised to see him correcting people and say, nope, it's Lopes.
All right.
Have they spelled it with a Z? I've only seen it with an S.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what this is. Yeah. I don't know.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, Lopes. Excuse me.
Maybe. I was curious.
So yeah, obviously, there was big shows they missed, but you know, the production quality of the videos that they put up is fantastic. So
yeah,
I mean, it's still great to just, you know, put them on and watch and listen to them after the fact. So I will look forward to that, and yeah, hopefully next year, Name That Tune won't be on in the middle of the night. Yeah,
can only hope. But
we'll see. Yeah, MAGFest, it's still crazy. It's still wild. It's still. Still there. The same. Yeah, it's still there. Yeah, just lots of music going on, like all over the place, like in the hallways. Part of the reason that there was, you know, that it got bumped to the middle of the night is that some of what was the larger panel space got converted into more music space this year. Like they had a whole like expansion pack stage.
Okay.
Which was, I guess, about the size of the Mark Hotel main events, if you know remember that one. Yeah, which also doesn't work out when you have someone that a ton of people want to see, like Family Jewels playing in there.
Right.
So, yeah, I don't know. But I remember, you know, it's just moments like, oh, I'm just walking around, and then there's just these random four people absolutely ripping out KK Cruisin', and one of the guys on the saxophone is in, like, a full fursuit, and just, like, you know, that's just MAGFest, man, and that rules. Yep. That's awesome. It's, you know, it was like 8:30 Sunday morning, so they had this big thing set up like outside, like under the escalators that go down to the marketplace, which was like this pegboard with like LCDs behind it, and you'd like flick one of the pegs and like color would splash and ripple across the board. And just like Sunday morning, like some of like the Gaylord employees were gathered around it and kind of like messing with it, and just like, you know, one of them like hit one of the pegs, and I just kind of said boing outside out loud, and there was this guy leaning against the pillar who starts laughing his ass off, and he's just like, dude, I haven't slept, I'm completely out of it, but you saying boing was just like the funniest thing I've ever heard. You just made my day, dude. And he fist bumped me. And it's just like, these are MAGFest interactions that you just don't get anywhere else. And the amount of people that nowhere else do so many people come up to me and, or just like, just start talking to me about like whatever shirt I'm wearing, like this hoodie, my Akuma hoodie. Just people coming up to me like, oh my God, your hoodie. And just having friendly conversations with strangers. That just doesn't happen anywhere else in my life anymore than MAGFest. And I still do cherish the ability for that. And people, like, you bump into people and everyone's saying sorry to each other, like you're in Canada. That's not true. Canadians are rude. At least when they're in our country. At least when they're at Target down the street from my house.
It occurred to me when I started having the little bit of FOMO that I, you know, once I started seeing people posting photos of the atrium, and I started feeling like, I wish I was there. I'm reminded that, you know, as terrible as the stereotype of the worst of the gaming community can be, when you get 10,000 gamers in one space of, you know, the broad swath,
25,000
gamers, you know, congregating together all in one place with the broad swath of demographics that we are in terms of age and gender and ethnicity and everything. It really is. We are a rainbow coalition of friendly, funny, surprisingly attractive people. We're just endless hotties. We are the rainbow coalition of gamers, just hotties everywhere who are all just nice and friendly.
There is no place I go that I see so much ass just hanging out.
A lot of ass.
I walked out of Name That Tune, and you know, I don't mean to be rude, I don't mean to stare, but I kept just being like, I don't think that girl's actually wearing any pants right now. I just could not discern any pants. It was just ass. But it was 3 a.m.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Yeah, baby.
Maybe there are pants somewhere.
Yeah.
And very inclusive too at MAGFest, too. Like, as far as, you know, different genders and sexualities and and acceptance there, and just, you know, there's yeah, ribbons for putting pronouns on your badges.
Yes,
and they had like a special stage for like the Americans with Disabilities Act stage. So it's like people who were wheelchair bound or otherwise, you know, had difficulty walking or standing, had a place like right next to like the production stage in the main events where they could go up and they could see, and they wouldn't have to just be like off in the corner, which is great.
Yeah.
I thought that was fantastic. Yeah, it's great. And I did express worry out loud that I'm just like, my God, in Trump's America, I was like, is he going to come cracking down on MAGFest being this friendly? I mean, you laugh, but like,
I know
this friendly, cute, this huge, friendly, inclusive event that happens, you know, right in the shadow of Washington. You know, I land on the tarmac. I can see the Capitol building. It's right there.
Yeah.
It's just like, just makes me worry a little bit. There's like, yeah, like no events can have gender neutral bathrooms or pronoun indicators or whatever, or, you know, what kind of bullshit are you going to try to enforce?
I mean, the moment. ADA in general.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. In ways you didn't expect, just like trying to cut federal funding for fucking everything.
I don't know. It could be the whole podcast and we're trying not
it
to.
Could yeah, it's already been a lot. It's 8:40 and I got so much to talk about, guys.
I know me too. Before we move on from MAGFest, I do want to pass along one actionable item to our listeners. A longtime MAGFest mainstay, Wes Johnson, suffered a very serious health event. He is in the hospital. Sure. I do not know if he is conscious. He collapsed, and was found unconscious in his hotel room, at an event where he was
not MAGFest,
to be clear.
This is
to be clear. Well, elsewhere. And he was not invited back to MAGFest this year, and he was a little salty about that. So when MAGFest posted about his GoFundMe to help him out, I felt a little conflict in my heart, but yeah, Wes Johnson, there's something dangerously, perilously, life-threateningly wrong with Wes Johnson right now. For the sake of his family's privacy, they're not saying exactly what it is. This only just happened a few days ago, so maybe they don't entirely know what is wrong with him yet, but there is a GoFundMe for him. It's pretty easy to find. It's on all his socials. If you are able, I encourage you to throw a few bucks Wes's way, because not only has his appearances at MAGFest are always fun and funny, as a voice actor in all of Bethesda's games, he's brought laughter and light to people for decades now. He is known to be a generally, you know, friendly, gracious, gregarious guy. He has actively reached out to me and helped me audition for work that he has produced. I didn't book it, but that's fine. Wes is a good guy. So if voice actors, you might think that a guy of his caliber is rich and famous. He's not. He's just a working class stiff like all of the rest of us voice actors and
announcer for the announcer for the Capitals.
The announcer for the Capitals. Like, if you are able, I encourage you to help Wes on his wellness journey.
Yeah. Yeah. He was part of MAGFest before the Gaylord years, I believe. He was going back to like the Mark Center. So long time.
He and John St. John doing it forever.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. 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 I haven't seen John St. John hasn't been there in a while, but that's a whole other thing.
Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah. He's not local too. There's a cost associated with Big John.
Yeah.
Yeah. Moving on. When last we left our heroes, we had done the blank of the year. Shortly, a few days before Christmas.
Yeah.
And we're a little over a month after that. But yeah, I tell you, I mean, I've already been talking a lot on this podcast, so we should probably rotate to somebody else. But it's like, I finished a Metaphor ReFantazio.
Oh, you finished it?
The day before, yeah, on Christmas Eve.
Oh, wow.
Which meant, you know, I had been playing that game for like 2.5 months straight. That was pretty much all I was playing, 100% of what I was playing. So without a massive 90-hour RPG over my shoulders, I have been ripping through games in the last month. But somebody else can go first. Somebody else can start talking shit. Weiss, you see a movie?
I mean,
I have two movies.
Yeah. Oh, well, I was going to go, I'll do games because I actually have sort of. I mean, after the Okami announcement, Okami finally went on sale on Switch for $5. So I've been playing Okami. That game's great.
After a little research, I also bought it on Switch. That the incident went on sale for $5 because people generally agree that with the touch screen is the best implementation of like the Switch touch screen controls specifically. Like that's the place to play Okami. Apparently, like out of all the ports, it's people.
I never touch my screen.
No,
never ever. So I didn't even know it was an option.
Oh,
right. I'm like, the controller worked fine. It worked just as well as the PS2 one, which is the last one I played. But like, that game is obviously really, really good. It's also like, it was allowed to be so weird, not only in the obvious ways, but like in the structure of it. Because like, even when I played it the first time, I remember I put it down for, I don't know if it was like 6 months or a year after the first time you beat, you beat the villain about like halfway through, not even halfway through. There's a big celebration and then that's not the end of the game. Obviously, it's not a trick, but also it feels so conclusive that it still was tempting to put the game down. And then some of the biggest areas are after it. So it feels very lopsided as that goes. It's kind of interesting.
I've tried to pick up Okami twice in the past, and I've always loved my time with it, but just never, for whatever reason, never ended up getting very far. So I'm looking forward to this time finally being the time that sticks. But I think my memories of it is that however much people purport that it, you know, is a Zelda clone, the world never felt, I could never hold the world visually in my head in terms of a sense of place. Am I wrong in that? Or I mean, it's,
what do you mean? Like you can't,
I guess I mean that, I mean, every Zelda game by degrees, the areas are, you know, split up into however much the system's RAM is able to hold at one time, right? So
the distinction between the worlds,
Between the distinction between each distinct area, I guess. The cohesiveness of how those things come together as a whole, I guess. I was never able to make it far enough where I could sort of like visualize the whole of the map in my head and like, oh, this is here, this is here, this is here, and this is how these areas relate to each other.
Well, you'd be shocked to know that I've never been able to do that with a single game ever in my life.
I do not have a visual memory. In Okami, if I recall, the areas just kind of like they progress in kind of a linear fashion, even though they branch out within themselves. It's not like you get to zone 3 and it loops back to zone 1. It's just kind of here's zone 1, here's zone 2, here's zone 3, here's you're up in the mountains here.
That's always the impression that I got. I wasn't sure if I was off.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, there's a couple sneaky, this leads to that. That's interesting. But for the most part, it's not, I will say Jet Set was the best that I had with that kind of like layout coming together. I was staring at that map endlessly.
I've never been, Jet Set's one for me that I have never been able to remember where I'm going.
To your point in both those games, but like Okami, I will get lost pretty easily, and I don't think the map is particularly great per se, so like that could add to that. But no, it's still very fun. It's still hornier than I remembered. The second that I say it, I'm just like, of course it is. But
yeah,
didn't think about it. But yeah, no, I love that era of Clover. I love, you know, like, yeah. After this, I was just sort of like, give me a beautiful Joe collection. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah,
I want that real bad.
Yeah, the time is now.
Yeah. But, and other game I played was the, I got in, not only was it at $35, but also I had some Amazon credit because I bought a phone, but I finally got the Marvel Capcom collection.
Oh, hey.
Yeah. Yay. So I haven't really put it through the ringer per se, but you know, I've played 2 and I played Superheroes and I played Children of the Atom. Like, and it's almost like it almost looks too good in the older games. Yeah. Like those sprites look so crisp.
Yeah.
I'm like,
yeah.
Did they look like this?
I know. Yeah, it's just, I love going back to those older games where there are fewer things happening on the screen compared to Marvel 2. Where you can really appreciate some of the sprite work, and especially mm-hmm. because the versions that, well, I know that I played most were the PlayStation ports, and mm-hmm. you know, at the mm-hmm. time, the missing frames of animation were completely invisible to me, but playing the actual arcade versions of these games, and you see just how lavishly some of those sprites are. I mean, they're all animated so beautifully, but the ones mm-hmm. that really show off, like Spiral, the elements of Venom that are constantly undulating and just getting to
appreciate that blew my mind the first time. I think Venom like was up there with like Darkstalkers sprites, like as a kid in arcades, just being like.
Sentinel is like multiple sprites stitched together.
Yeah, Sentinel's incredible. I love.
Or just Juggernaut. Juggernaut's just so big.
Oh yeah, that was one of those things where I was doing too, where I was just like, God, I just love big guys in fighting games. Like I was just mm-hmm. like playing Juggernaut and Hulk and just like enjoying just the feeling of that.
Yeah. It just takes up half the screen. It's insane.
Yeah.
And I forgot that Marvel Superheroes sort of has that Smash Brothers Brawl collecting the gems like-ness to it.
Yeah, it's a cool little mechanic. Oh, right.
Yeah, that is a cool little mechanic. That worked a little better than I expected, actually, going back.
It was funny to me.
I haven't really like separated them. Mm-hmm. Oh, go ahead, Dave.
Yeah, no, same. I never, you know, at the time in the 90s, I was never really super aware of the specific distinctions between the gameplay mechanics of all of them beyond just the different sets of characters. And it's only listening to the pair of Retronauts podcasts where they really deep dive into each successive game.
Oh, I gotta
series.
Do that now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was kind of surprised to hear that in general people poo-poo the Marvel ones. They're like, I guess the odd-numbered one. Maybe they're not odd, but Marvel Superheroes and X-Men versus Marvel Super, or I'm sorry, Street Fighter versus
Marvel Superheroes versus Street Fighter.
Marvel Superheroes versus Street Fighter.
Oh,
yeah, those are the ones that people generally consider to be like either a little unfinished or half steps, or like this is an idea that gets more fully thought out in the following.
See,
game.
I like Marvel Superheroes, like just the original one. I think it's very cool. Yeah. But I'm with them on Marvel Superheroes versus Street Fighter because like I remember the cat, like it being that one felt half-assed just because of the cast. Like there was very little, and it felt like it came right after X-Men versus Street Fighter, which was like, oh shit, tagging and they're fighting each other. And then it's like, oh, you're just putting Marvel in here. And like every Street Fighter character you chose is a Shoto character. This is lame.
And it reuses all the same backgrounds too, from X-Men versus Street Fighter, which I never realized at the time. So
I'm with you both on that.
Yeah. But it is, that's why it's so cool to have them all in one place so that you can bounce back and forth between them quickly and really appreciate those subtle differences.
Mm-hmm. And even though Children of the Atom, like the leap from Children of the Atom to Superheroes feels pretty big going back to back, but like Children of the Atom just out the gate. Wow.
It's fantastic.
That's a good game.
I love Children of the Atom. Like it's a real soft favorite of mine, especially because it's got such a unique cast like that. And again, they touch on this on this podcast again. I'm not to regurgitate information from someone else's podcast, but you know that lineup of characters. Apparently, if you were an X-Men fan at the time, you know, that was an odd selection of characters. But there was like one guy at Capcom of Japan who was a real big fan of Western comics, who like really knew the lore behind the characters. And so it was a combination of what he wanted to include and what Marvel would let them include.
Let them. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. So that's why you get, you know, like stuff like Silver Samurai and Spiral. Right. And, you know, those are characters that were obscure even then and are more so now.
Well, like those were kind of fresh because they were in that first year of the Jim Lee X-Men, like the 1990 X-Men run.
Oh.
Yeah. Like if you look at the first 12 or so issues, like that, I mean, if they're like, oh, these comics are the hot business over in America right now, like the first issues, the best selling comic of all time, we should focus on characters from this. It's like, yeah, Silver Samurai, Spiral, Omega Red. Mm-hmm. They're all in those first like dozen issues.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. Not a game, but I watched Summoning Salt's History of Tetris World Records. Have you guys heard of this?
Yes.
Ooh,
and I talked about
that video
last...
was
I don't know
Did
if
we?
I talked I
Yes.
Well, I talked about Summoning Salt's last time. I don't remember if I talked about that one specifically, but
Okay. Well, that was the one that I think it was Polygon had in their like roundup of video essays of the year. So that's the one. I watched a couple after this one, but yeah, wow, that was just like the most addicting thing.
Yes,
I've put on in forever.
Oh, it's incredible.
Yeah.
Every Summoning Salt video I watch, I'm just like, my God, this can't go any further. And then if you mouse over the timeline, he's like not even halfway through the video. And you're like,
what is
about to happen? Like, what is going on? Even watching I wasn't familiar with, like, Simpsons Hit and Run was, like, really satisfying.
Yeah, I need to do that, because I think, like, I dropped off of, like, Mario 3, like, maybe, like, halfway, where I'm like, okay, I see the pattern sort of thing. But, yeah, very, very well made.
So yeah, Tetris was incredible. I looked up, because after I watched the Tetris video, like, what was the thing they were chasing at the end of the Tetris video? Was it, like, the...
It was the crash. I mean, it's
they did the crash, and then it was like getting some. It was like, I think there was like a max. It was getting it to loop over or something like that.
Oh yeah,
back to level one, which I don't think had happened at the time the video was published, but has happened now. So, yes. So yeah, if you look that up, like it's one of the guys in the video, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like played Tetris until it looped back over to level one.
Jeez.
And like, it's funny because he's like freaking out and then like, but the pieces are then going so slow. He has time.
No. That was in there.
Oh, it wasn't
there?
Maybe
he added
I don't
something.
Know. I can't remember because there was so much to happen.
Yeah. That's the thing. It was a 2.5 hour video.
A lot happened. I feel like there was like one hill that was left to climb. I remember I looked up after I watched the Mega Man 2 one, like somebody had set a new record after the video had been published. So, you know, I mean, this is still, you know, active history of speedrunning.
For sure. And like the Tetris one was specifically cool too, because like that kid that was on the news, you know, like the build up to that, because I didn't have all the information of the speedrunning before that came out, and that was everywhere. That was like mainstream news stuff. So like it leading into that was very, very fun to be like, oh right, I watched this video 1,000 times.
Yeah.
You know, kids screaming and crying. So
yeah, it's cool. It's cool because like what's happening in the Tetris one just seems like, well, this is literally impossible until people figure out how to make it somehow possible.
Right.
By just changing the mechanics of how you use a controller. It's insane. Yeah.
It's like, oh, you can go faster now. Oh, that changes this.
Oh, now you can play when you're supposed to die. You can play fast enough when it's supposed to be too fast to be possible to play.
Yeah.
Dave, just so you know, like what they're doing is like they flip the controller over and they're like drumming on the back of it.
Yeah,
like with their fingers. So that way it like tapping on it and then moving their fingers that are on the controls lets them put in inputs faster than was ever considered. It's insane.
When you talked about the Tetris one on the last last time. I specifically looked that. I didn't watch the whole documentary, but I did, like, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's wild.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, Dave, did you play any video games?
Oh, my gosh. I played so many video games.
We got some crossover, though, Dave.
We do
sure.
have some crossover, yeah.
Because I deliberately played games you were playing. Some.
Yeah. Yeah, shortly after, right after, during Christmas break, I guess, after we recorded the podcast, I had the chance to go back and play a couple of games that I had missed out on, that I wanted to try to play this
Where'd
year.
Where'd your audio go?
Where, my
there
audio?
It is.
My, okay. Oh,
it's back now. It's back now. It's back.
Yeah, right. It dropped for me too.
Oh, okay. Well, it's in the recording, so looks like we're good.
Good.
Thanks for the heads up, though.
A little special feature for them. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. So we bought, played, and beat the game Little Kitty Big City in one short afternoon. Uh-huh. Just me and the girls passing the controller around. It's a very Untitled Goose Game kind of game. Just a very cute, twee, let's explore this enclosed city area. Sort of the overall structure of a point and click adventure game, but not the mechanics. Like, I don't know how to categorize this type of game anymore, because Untitled Goose Game falls into this category. I'd say Thank Goodness You're Here falls into this category. And those two games are more similar to each other than Little Kitty Big City, because Little Kitty Big City is a little more 3D platformy than those other two games, but it's still the same kind of game. You're just controlling the character differently. Yeah, it's just kind of a very short little adventure game, and we beat it in an afternoon, and they loved it. It was great.
Nice.
Good.
Yeah, we picked up Nintendo Switch Sports, and my kids are addicted to Wii Bowling all over again.
Yeah,
it's fantastic.
Yeah,
yeah, it's a great.
Richard was really into that game, and now he's lost the cartridge. So
oh no.
Put things back in cases.
Yep. The Steam Deck continues to prove to be a little miracle machine. I've been messing around with with emulating systems that I've never really been able to emulate. So I've been doing like Sega's Model 2 and Model 3 arcade boards, and getting to play like Daytona 2 and Scud Race, you know, things that you can only play in the Like a Dragon series these days. you know, those games are incredible. They look incredible to this day. My God, Model 3 arcade games are beautiful. And it's crazy for me to look at like what the Model 3 arcade platform was doing and compare it to the Dreamcast, which looks very similar and is less powerful, but is also literally a tenth of the cost. Like a hundredth of the my math is. Yeah, like 100. The Model 3 arcade board cost $20,000 per unit, and a Dreamcast was 200. And like with the difference of just a couple of years between them, just about 2 years, I think, which is crazy that the Dreamcast was able to mostly replicate the overall look of Model 3, even if it didn't quite have the same level of detail and polygon count. And even if developers couldn't quite get it with some ports, I think Genki porting Virtua Fighter 3, everyone complained about it. I don't know.
I complained about this. Huh?
I'm emulating Virtua Fighter 4 on the Naomi 2 board, and I never knew that the Virtua Fighter 4 Evolution PS2 port that I always liked a lot is actually a very cut down port. Like, I did not know how inaccurate it was.
I didn't know that either.
It's like, it's half the resolution, it's half the frame rate. They had to apply that characteristic PS2 motion blur effect to compensate for it being half the frame rate. Like, the level of detail is way down, and so like I feel like I'm playing Virtua Fighter 4 for the first time, like the true version, and I'm blown away. It's sharp and clear and looks amazing. and and today, just today, I played Rave Racer, the arcade version of Rave Racer for the first time, which was the third Ridge Racer game. I was always a big fan of the PlayStation Ridge Racers. Everyone always said that they were pretty much arcade perfect. They're not. They're also half the resolution and half the frame rate. So it's crazy to see the arcade originals be like, oh my gosh, this is so sharp and runs 60 frames per second. This is incredible. This is the way these games are kind of meant to be played. I emulated Transformers Devastation, the PS3 version, on my Steam Deck.
All right.
Because I don't own it on Steam. I'd have to figure out how to run a cracked version of it on Steam Deck if I wanted to play it. But it can emulate the PlayStation 3 version. And it chugs a little bit, but otherwise it just works. It just works.
Wow.
Which is nuts.
What's crazy is that game has come up twice this week.
Go on. I've been missing that game. Yeah. And I've been trying to find an excuse to try to get it to run on the Steam Deck. I'm trying to bust through these. I went back and for the very first time played Crusader of Senti, also known as Celeel in other territories.
I played some of that.
Oh, you played some of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I played it in its entirety, start to finish for the first time on my Anbernic RG35XXSP, which is the one that's shaped like a Game Boy Advance SP. So I'm just going to call it the SP from now on. Tim, it was after, you consulted with me about what Richard should buy, which emulation handheld Richard should buy. It occurred to me, you know, I take
yeah, if you want to get a text back from David Ottavino fast, start talking about little emulator portables.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, it'll be a day at least.
Totally.
But you ask about this and just like, okay, kids, get away from me.
I have information. I have important information.
Daddy's
got to
go to work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it just occurred to me, I mess around with these fun little handhelds all the time, but I've never actually sat down and played a game start to finish on one. And so I wanted to make a point of doing that. I had never played Crusader of Senti before. And this is the Sega Genesis game that's a clone of Link to the Past.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay. Interesting. How's the music?
It's catchy. It's lovely. It's fun. It's good. Okay. It's an Atlas published joint, so it's
That's why, because it's like early Atlas. That's probably where I've seen the name more than anything.
Yeah.
Wiki.
Yeah, like visually, it's a dead ringer for Link to the Past. Gameplay wise, Tim, I felt like it had a similar level of jank to like Secret of Mana, where like
the
hit detection's not flawless, but it's good enough.
Like maybe your sword swing's a little too slow.
Yeah. Maybe it doesn't feel quite like it's connecting at the like 1-to-1 pixel hitbox that Link to the Past seems to manage. But again, it's fine. It's good enough. I really, really enjoyed it for being a Zelda clone that takes different things from Zelda than all the modern Zelda clones, which almost adhere too slavishly to the formula. This felt like a breath of fresh air to me because it was like Zelda, but completely new structurally.
Yeah.
Do you enjoy your...
No, that's very cool. Just the alternate history of it.
Yes. That's what it feels like. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it doesn't save. You got to save manually. Got to remember to do that.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Yeah, because if you don't do that, you put down the game after you die the first time. Because that's what happened to me. That was my experience with Crusader of Senti. I did save the game once. And, you know, I'm just playing, just not really thinking about it. And then I died and I was like, oh, I'm back here, but I haven't done all this shit. And I actually don't know exactly what killed me. If it was some kind of like an instant kill trap or something, or maybe I was low on health and didn't notice, but I don't think I was that low on health. But yeah, I was just like, oh, if I'm going to die out of nowhere and don't know what happened and I have to remember to save all the time, I'm not going to play this game anymore. And then I turned it off.
Yeah.
That was pretty much it. I played like 30 minutes of it. Yeah. I was just like, nah, no thanks.
Well, the other thing that
I wanted... That is the thing that always gets me with older games, is I'm so used to things saving that now it's like, if I go back to try to play something that doesn't, it's especially like an RPG. And this doesn't have like save points that like pop up. And it's the thing, like in Zelda, you know, you die, but you would get, you know, if it was on the overworld, they'd pop you back to like what, the sanctuary or your house or something. Yep, but you still keep the stuff that you found. You wouldn't have to redo anything. And same thing with a dungeon. Whereas this, it was like, no, you need to go and get all that money back and go repurchase the sword throw and basically do everything you just did. And I was like, no, I'm not. No thanks.
You weren't playing it on a device that could sufficiently rewind or.
No. I was playing on my my analog pocket.
Okay.
That's what I brought with me to MAGFest because I was like, I don't want to bring. I know it's on Switch, which would have been better because that does have like a rewind on there. But I was just like, I'm going for a day. I don't need to pack one of my larger handhelds, and I'm trying to carry one bag.
Well, see, I was going to praise it for being largely a breezy, frictionless experience by modern standards. I was going to praise it for being like, there's very little that in the game that is, I think contemporaneous reviews said it was easy. Some complained that it was too easy. For me, that just means, it just doesn't have a lot of the obtuse cruft that games of that vintage come saddled with. It's breezy and playable by modern standards. So I really enjoyed it and fortunately didn't encounter any save snafus.
Just gotta remember to save.
Well, so the Anbernic SP has a wonderful setting where you can set it up. I don't know. Did Richard end up purchasing this one or anything? No. All right.
No. Nothing as of yet.
All right. It has this terrific setting where you can choose the behavior of closing the clamshell lid on it. You can have it just be put to sleep like a Game Boy SP would do. Or maybe that didn't happen until DS.
Correct.
DS. All right. So you can have it when you close the clamshell, you can have it put to sleep, or you can have it save and all the way shut down.
Oh.
So it will create a save state for you and shut it down. And then when you open it back up and power it on the next time, it will boot straight to, it will load that save state automatically. So I think I was safely covered in case I did fail to manually save. I think there was always a save state running every time I clamped it closed. So that's a wonderful little device to play games of that vintage because of that. Oh, I'm going to close it. It automatically saves for me. Fantastic. I don't have to think about it.
Yeah, wow.
So, Tim, there is another game that you and I both played. That had I played, man, we played RZ Jewel of Faramore.
Sure did.
Had I played RZ Jewel of Faramore before the podcast, it would have been on my list of games of the year. I loved this game.
It sounds like you're making shit up. Like when people are making fun of like streaming services that don't exist.
What, Tubu? Oh yeah, no. It's on Gozo.
Right.
No, you can watch it right now on Meepu.
Is this the Wand of Gamelon game?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I had to visually see Arzette in my head. Yes. Okay. That makes sense. I want to play this game. Yes.
Yeah. And I think the thing that was most winning for me about it is it is a real trick to give you the experience of playing not just a particular game from history, but a particular console from history, to give you that sense of what was this like and remove the frustrations that came with it being one of the most notoriously bad games of all time. Like, you not only do you get to experience, what is the experience of playing a Philips CDI game of this vintage, but actually have fun with it.
Yeah.
Like, that's a magic trick that is, I can't believe they pull off as well as they do, but they do. And I think in large part, it's because they pull from a lot of what is familiar, even if you never played a Philips CDI machine, which I never have. But if you've played any game of this particular vintage where the game mechanics of 8 and 16-bit games started to get paired up with the multimedia storage capacity of CD-ROMs and what they used that for with the animation and the voice work, the streaming audio. Oh, God, the music. The music in this game is so perfect. Someone, I don't know who the composer is, but they studied the general MIDI sound font and what instruments were used the most in the early to mid 90s. Cause like, it's very like slap bass heavy. The particular instrumentation in the music in this game is just so perfectly of this vintage. The sort of like tribal flute sounds that you hear in a lot of like, you know, David Wise's Donkey Kong Country stuff, you know, it's very reminiscent of that particular 90s style. Just stuff like that, that gives you those nostalgic cues from the things that we are probably all familiar with from that period, combined with the, you know, sort of higher resolution backgrounds that are kind of like a lot more greens and purples that you'd see in like a Euro platformer of that era. So it's a little Rayman. A lot of the levels are big and a little airplane hangar level, which is, you know, a typical descriptor for Euro games, when they have that airplane hangar sense of like, this is just a huge empty space and there's things hidden in areas that you would never find. You just have to doggedly explore this big empty airplane hangar of a level. But Arzette does just enough streamlining to give you the impression of these things from this era, but still keep things fun, still keep things moving. Maybe it's a nostalgia exercise, but it is one of the best, most effective, most well thought out nostalgia exercises I think I've ever played. Tim, what'd you think?
I thought it was okay.
Okay.
No, I liked all the, you know, the weird, the animations of the characters and such. I thought playing it was just fine.
Okay.
If it was much longer, I probably would have been mad at it.
Yeah.
Well, it's just like, you know, they give you these levels and you have to kind of bounce back and forth between them. You don't always know where you need to go to like find the thing. And, you know, I just got aggravated with that like a little bit sometimes. I mean, it's like they're short levels kind of, but sometimes just like, oh God, where the fuck did I see that? Where can I do this? Where can I use a candle? Where can I find a candle? Where can I do this thing? Because there's some important things that you need to accomplish that are like, they each level has like some like icons that can be filled in to kind of tell you like what's in the level, but there are important things that are not represented by icons until you have done them in the level. Like, you know, clearing like setting off like one of the beacons or something like clearing a boss. So it's like you kind of have to keep mucking through and revisiting levels and sometimes not finding the thing that you're looking for.
Yeah. But you're not completely blind on that front though, because on the world map, after you accomplish something that triggers something in another level, if it's required to progress, a little icon will appear above that level.
It's a quest thing. Yeah. Sometimes. Yes. Yeah. But I mean, the game was 2.5 hours long, so, you know, whatever. it's still such an interesting thing.
Yeah.
Because I didn't realize it was so short.
Because of what it's doing and like what it's showing up. You know, it's like, holy crap. What the heck was I going to say? Yeah, I mean, I got it in a Humble Bundle. That was great.
Yeah, same.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I need to go before the water real quick. I'll be right back.
Oh yeah. All right. Well, I'm just looking forward to what they make next. That's all.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, totally. it's such a unique, you know, I don't know if this is a very ad hoc team. I know, like, I'm not sure I haven't sat down and watched John Linneman of Digital Foundry's video about it because, of course, he participated in the development. Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that.
Yes,
okay.
he voices a character.
That's a big. Oh, yeah. He participated.
He participated. Yes, his colleague Audie Sorley, I believe, was a producer on the game. Dimitris, the YouTuber Modern Vintage Gamer, who is a retro game programmer, and has programmed some ports of games commercially. Mm-hmm. He does a voice, and I might have helped contribute some programming. I'm not sure, so I don't know how much this was like an ad hoc supergroup of enthusiasts who wanted to make this.
I mean, like, short tangent, I was just thinking about, you know, like, Greg Cassavin going off to make Bastion.
Yeah.
You know, and, like, no one that plays Hades knows that, you know, started from a games journalist, you know, like, stuff like that.
Yeah, no, it's really cool. I don't think, you know, people like John Linneman he's not in a place to, like... necessarily. Yeah, I don't feel like there's a conflict of interest or anything necessarily, but I don't know, maybe it appealed more to me than to Tim because of this sort of Eurogame kick that I've been on for the past couple of years and wanting to explore more like Amiga and Commodore 64 and Spectrum games, because it really feels like one of those. It really feels like, oh, this is a weird, long-lost Amiga game that, you know, everyone says looked beautiful and impressive in screenshots, but you've never actually played. It's like playing Shadow of the Beast, you know, for the first time.
Right. Or, yes.
it just has that feeling, or like something on DOS that I never would have experienced at the time.
And I appreciate when you said like it doesn't feel as rough as those, you know, 3DO games would have felt in playing. Like, as much as I enjoy D2. Watching Swery's earlier game, I can't think of the name right now, the survival horror one.
Yeah.
All right. Sorry about that.
Swery 65's, what was his first game? I can't think of the name of. Do you know it off the top of your head?
Escaping me too. I feel like I know what you're talking about.
Whatever. I mean, watch Rory play like all of it. But it was one of those things where like it was doing the survival horror thing, but also... it controlled like a survival horror game, so I never wanted to actually play it.
Yeah.
Like a PS1 survival horror. So, like, updating it just enough to still be fun.
Yeah. It's that's the thing. I mean, there is nothing particularly special or noteworthy about the level design or the platforming so much as that stuff just exists to streamline what would have been a chore in the real Wand of Gamelon into something that is actually playable.
Right. Deadly Premonition.
Oh, yes. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
that game where people are like, it's great because it's bad. And I'm like, it's bad. I don't want to play it.
I mean, it's... Right.
It's a style. I get it. I understand. But I'm just like...
Ugh. No, it's... My short version of that, which is like, because everybody was looking for like the perfect B movie that was a game, and that is Resident Evil 4. Straight up, like it, you really enjoy playing it, and the script is batshit, and it's just doing things that the auteur maker wanted to do, like, and it doesn't make sense, and there's a little Napoleon fella.
Yeah,
but
Dave. Yeah. Dave, did you play some of Vampire Survivors Ode to Castlevania?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, I absolutely did. Yeah. I haven't touched in a little while.
Okay.
I've successfully escaped its grasp to move on to other games. Okay. All right. But
did you see credits on it?
Oh, no. No, I have not.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Because there is a point at which you will see credits. But you got a lot of work to do, I think, probably to get there.
Yeah. Very much so. I really haven't.
Yeah. That DLC is packed. That DLC is an entire goddamn game. They just, and it's great. like it's fantastic. It's got me fully back into like I was kind of bouncing back and forth between that and the Contra DLC, which I hadn't finished. Which is also cool, but man, this Castlevania, it's insane.
The point at which I purposefully put it down to give myself the chance to play other things, I don't believe I had even unlocked any additional characters yet, which is kind of main excitement level for me. Yeah, I really want to unlock all the characters. Mm-hmm.
I recommend doing it because there is so much to do in there. Like they have a huge map, like it's heavily based on Symphony of the Night.
Yeah,
I would say, like with the monsters that are in there, the bosses you encounter. Well, I guess, yeah, some of the areas of the castle, but also there's a lot of bosses that are from like the DS games as well that are in there that show up. But yeah, there's tons of stuff to like explore. Like you open up fast travel points throughout the map as you go. So eventually you know, by the time you're on like your 10th character, you can fast travel to the clock tower, which is like the fifth point in the castle.
I love that.
Yeah. Yeah. Because you need to get around, like some of the objectives eventually are like, you need to kill this boss with this character to unlock the next character.
I love that.
Yeah. Or you need to evolve like this weapon. And like some of them are dropped by bosses, or they're scattered around the castle, or there's like items around the castle. Like they introduced this item, I think, in the Contra DLC, where it's like you pick it up and you can pick whatever support item you need. So it's like you're like, oh, I need to evolve this. Well, I'll make sure that I go and get one of these so I have the item I need to evolve it. Just, you know, an ease of use thing there. But yeah, you go through and you know, it's a star-studded cast of Castlevania characters. I appreciate that they start you out with Leon Belmont from freaking Lament of Innocence. You're unlocking more Belmonts. There's like a ton of different whip weapons. You're unlocking like, you know, all the spellcaster characters, that, you know, your Belnades that cast spells, all these other weirdos. It's characters from more or less games that you've played or at least mostly recognize until, you know, the big thing is trying to get to Richter. Once you unlock Richter and you go, you then have to make your way up to Dracula's throne room. And that's where things progress into an ending, which I won't say more about because it's its own crazy thing that needs to be seen. It is clear that this dude loves Castlevania.
Well, yeah. Like, I mean, yeah,
like
this DLC...
obviously, but still it's yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, as it was, I mean, Vampire Survivors was always, I might be the first person to point this out, that Vampire Survivors bears a little resemblance to Castlevania on its own. I think I'm the only person to ever say that. No, I mean, that goes without saying, obviously, but yeah, so that this DLC kind of makes it feel like the game it was always meant to be just does really feel really special. Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, after you do roll credits, you then have like 20 more characters to unlock. Oh. If you thought you were scraping the bottom of the barrel, you broke through the bottom of the barrel, and we are getting like you're getting the werewolf from the N64 game, I think, is in there to unlock. No, like the cuts are going to be as deep as they can be.
That's wonderful.
I think I just unlocked the Dark Priest Shaft. But also you unlock more castle. You cannot, there's huge swaths of the castle that aren't accessible until after you beat the game, and it's just crazy.
That's wonderful. That's amazing.
Yeah, it's fantastic. It is so packed in there, and you know, I've probably put like 15 hours into that alone in the past month. And I still have plenty of stuff to dip in and more characters to play and more stuff to unlock. And it's a blast. And there is so much good fucking music.
That's tons of
remixes Castlevania remixes and arranged tracks. And that's, It's great. It's so good.
Oh, that's wonderful. I'm so happy for this developer, because this must be such a dream come true for them.
And yeah,
clearly the labor of love that they've put into this practically full new game sold as dirt cheap DLC is just, yeah,
it kills me. He could charge really so much more. Yeah. He could charge more. It would be worth it.
Yeah. Well, that's fantastic. Yeah. That makes me want to.
Yep.
Yeah, that makes me get
in
the
there
itch to go play it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. No. The only other addictive game that I've picked up a couple of times has been Balatro, because I got Jan to start playing it. Because it's we got 3 months of Apple Arcade, and so it's, you can get it for free on your iPhone. So she's been playing it, and she just, more so than most people, I think, because she really does not know poker hands at all. Mm-hmm. And so,
oh, wow. Okay.
But she keeps playing it, and she keeps saying, like, I'm still not quite sure I know what I'm doing, but I want to play again. I'm like, well, that is the Balatro experience. That's, you know, what everyone says. I'm still not quite sure what's going on, but I think I love this. Until, you know, you are many hours in. So I think she is many hours in now. Still doesn't know what's going on, but still is having fun. So good for her.
Mm-hmm. Well, good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's all right.
You ready for the
games
rundown here?
Yeah.
All right. Here we go. I went back and I finished Thank Goodness You're Here, which took me like 30 minutes, if that. The game's not long to begin with, and I just like put it down and just didn't get the chance to pick it back up. So. Oh, by the way, a lot of Balatro cosplay at MAGFest.
Oh, cool.
Lots of Jokers out there.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was cool.
Yeah.
I can imagine. So, yeah, I finished Thank Goodness You're Here. That game's fantastic.
Did you write to them?
I did not write to them.
Oh.
I thought that, God, that arm thing towards the end was so weird. so weird. Yeah, I played a little bit of a beat 'em up called Streets of Red, which was ill-advised. These were the developers that would go on to make that Double Dragon game that came out last year that a lot of people liked, I did not.
Double Dragon Gaiden?
I think so. I didn't think it was very good at all. And I don't think this game's very good at all either, but I wanted to try it because I thought it looked kind of... I was like just looking at it, and I'm like, the characters you play as are like... The premise is there's like a zombie outbreak at like a anime convention. So the characters are in costume, and one of the costumes is Terra in Magitek armor, which I thought was cool. But man, as a beat-em-up just doesn't feel good. It sucks.
I don't recall that Double Dragon game getting particularly good reviews.
I mean, some people seem to fucking love it I know.
I missed that too.
And I did not, but it carries over a lot of the mechanics from Streets of Red, where there's like a comboing system about getting like health drops to happen, and just like kind of the very stubby feel of the combat, having too many enemies for an encounter to the point where it gets boring. I was waiting for it to go on Steam sale to check it out, and I refunded that shit promptly. it was just not, man. No.
Yeah, that game just never looked appealing for the same reason that Double Dragon Gaiden always looked unappealing. Yeah. Just teeny tiny short stubby characters with no real sense of impact in the hits.
I didn't like the art direction. I wanted to see the weirdness. I wanted to see what was going on with it.
Gave it a shot.
Not worth checking out. Gave it a fair shot. Anyways, much better games I checked out, because I did a buckshot of money into the Steam sale to get a few things to check out.
Yes, as did I. I bought too many Steam games.
I realized I forgot to check. I bought, I think I got Tiny Terry's Turbo Trip that I want to check out.
That's been on my wish list. I forget why. Did you tell me to play that?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm going to play it in the next month. It must have fallen off the first banner on my Steam Deck, because I think I got the bundle for GDQ. Mm. So, you know, some games filled in there. Whatever. I remember when you started talking about Little Kitty Big City, I was like, oh, shit, right, that game. Anyways, Mini Shoot Adventures, which is a twin stick shooter Zelda-like game.
Oh. Mini Shoot?
It's called Mini Shoot Adventures. It's really cool. Yeah, it's a twin stick shooter where you are adventuring around an overworld, going into dungeons, getting upgrades that let you explore more of the world. This was the Zelda-like game that I enjoyed this past month.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and upgrading your shooting. Yeah, it's cool. And it's not like a long game. It's like 5-6 hours. It's got a nice, clean graphical style to it.
Yeah. Good use of color.
Didn't think it was too oppressively hard. I was also thinking that, like, man, it's a lot of brown out here. But I think because it's, you know, the mechanics are shooter based, they had to make sure that shots would contrast with the background.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they didn't want to keep like switching colors all the time. Like when you go into underground areas, there is some different colors, but it's kind of the same muted palette. So that is a downer of the game, I guess. Another downer of the game is it does that thing where you finish the game and it's like, oh, but wait, there's more. You need to explore more if you want to unlock the true ending and do more shit. And I did some of that and then I gave up. Cause I think I figured out that I had to there was like an item that I needed to progress and I could not find it. There was an ability. There's some like integral abilities that cannot be. Yeah. I don't know. They give you a map with things to go to. And if the way you get this item is by completing the little races that are in the game, then fuck that. Cause I didn't like the races. So, but I enjoy the, I'm not, you know, it was a fun game. It is a recommendo for sure. Yeah. Rise of the Golden Idol, you know, the sequel to Case of the Golden Idol. And this is more of that stuff, that kind of Oberdin, like investigative logic puzzle figuring stuff out. And it's great. Go figure. Mm. It was I don't think I stopped playing that game until it was done. Oh. Really just kept turning on my Steam Deck and playing more of that. So, yeah, longer than Case of the Golden Idol for sure. More story bits in there, which I think made it, there was sometimes, not like within each individual scene. I was able to follow each individual scene, but there were some pieces of the broader story that like kind of, I lost track of because there was so much more content and there's like 5 chapters and each chapter has like 3 or 4 scenes in it. And I would like, there's some details that I just kind of lost track of along the way, but it was cool and it's a good overall story and those games are great. Played some Xeno Tilt Hostile Pinball Action.
I bought it, but I haven't tried it yet.
Yeah, it's cool. It is a modern, you know, crush game where you have a 3-tiered pinball table, almost too much crap going on. It took me quite a few runs to start to parse you know, what I needed to be doing, but like, you know, it looks good. It's fun to play.
It's a good pinball game. Love the predecessor Demon's Tilt. Love the heck out of that game. I think it's a wonderful homage to those Crush games. So
yeah, I don't know if I actually ever played that one, but yeah.
What? Really?
Yeah.
It's fantastic.
Yeah, really? Maybe. I feel like it's been on a wish list, like my Switch wish list for like a long time.
Oh,
well, whatever. I've played this one and you haven't, so meh. get out of here. It's good. Yeah, it's good stuff. I still have not finished Indiana Jones and the Great Circle. I do not get a lot of time to play on the TV, but that game is, I did talk about it briefly during Blank of the Year. I'm not sure, this is gonna sound bad or mean, I'm not sure how great of a game it is. Like the sneaking is fine, the shooting I don't think is very good at all, but it as an Indiana Jones experience, it is so goddamn good. It just, every, like the way the sound effects are, the way like the music is, the way the feel of the hits when you sneak up on a Nazi and you like club them over the head, and, you know, the progression of the story and finding things, just the way everything feels, like when you're lighting a torch or you're turning a key or you're like ka-chunking a lever in some, you know, ancient tomb. It just has such a great feel to it.
But the shooting's not great.
I don't think you barely have to shoot anything.
Okay.
It is mostly like kind of a sneakier game. Like usually when I'm shooting guys, it's then alerting every other dude in the area. So it's like, you don't really want to. I didn't think the shooting felt particularly good, which is surprising considering it's like the Wolfenstein guys.
Yeah, that's what I was. It's Machine Games is the Wolfenstein team, so I.
Yeah, but you don't. I don't have to. There was one mission where I've done like a lot of shooting, which was this really amazing set piece, like in like the Himalayan mountains, and you find like a ship, a Nazi like destroyer that's up there for some reason. This is related to the story of the Great Circle. And it just has some really incredible like set piece moments to it. But yeah, I mean, I guess it's just a thing where it's like, you know, if you're out and about and you're trying to like get yourself out of, if like you get caught and you're trying to get yourself out of trouble with like a revolver, it's just not happening.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But it's just generally it's like, just don't get into trouble or run away from it.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, it's definitely, I mean, like it's Indiana Jones, it's not Doom. So
yeah,
it doesn't necessarily, yeah, need to be.
I still never got a chance to play any of Machine Games, Wolfenstein games. So I like, yeah. I know that they get a lot of praise, but I guess I don't know what people generally say that they like them, but I guess I don't know what people like about them, but I can also see how they are primarily first-person shooters, like boomer shooters, but with a stronger narrative. So I'm assuming they give you a wide variety of, you know, a big arsenal of big, powerful guns with which to solve your problems.
I played the second one. I really liked it. I mean, the story in that game is crazy. It's
the,
so fun.
The New Order, right?
The new Colossus. The New Colossus.
Yes, that's right.
The New Colossus. Yeah. I think Colossus is the second one. New Order might be the first one.
Yeah.
They both have
New
Order.
New Order, the Old Blood, the New Colossus.
Okay.
The.
I don't know.
Yeah.
yeah. Either, but you know, the game isn't about shooting, I guess, to get back there.
Yeah.
It's more about, you know, you kind of sneaking around as Indiana Jones and like grabbing a piece of paper or grabbing an artifact and like, or like going into a tomb and then figuring out a puzzle in there. Like that's the stuff that you're here for. And that's most of the game. And it's just, it's super well produced. I guess for better or worse, Disney got caught wind of how good it is. And they're like, oh, we need more of those. So
they're rushing a sequel.
I don't know if they're rushing a sequel, but, or maybe they're just like, oh yeah, you may please make more of those. Yes, please.
Oh, okay.
They're just saying like, yeah, you can do more of those. Well, like,
gotcha.
Which is good, you know, if they have the backing, and so long as they're not like, well, you need to get another one out in 2 years. That's generally a bad thing. I also realized I should probably talk about, I've been playing a lot of Mario Party Jamboree.
Ah, okay. This is the,
because Richard got that for
one.
Christmas. Yes. Yeah, it's the newest one.
Okay.
You know, big, longtime Mario Party fan over here.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's a Mario Party game. That's it.
I mean, for me, I can't even. I'm a fan of Mario Party 1. Like, any of the other ones have been all right. They gave me an excuse to talk to people with a game going.
Yeah. But yeah.
Mario Party 1's the only one that I think of the game itself.
Yeah, and I think of how much it made my hand hurt.
Yes.
Because of what we did to ourselves spinning things.
When my friend went out and bought gloves. Yes.
Yeah. No, it's just, you know, it's another one of those. I think we've also played like a good amount of Superstars. I think I like that one better. That's the one that's kind of like a greatest hits of Mario Party.
Santa brought us Superstars this year. So we've been playing a lot of that over Christmas break.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, I like that one more. There's just some stuff about this one that is, I don't know. I don't like how they do the buddies in this game. Like that's something they did, I think, in Super Mario Party, the first one to Switch. Maybe they did it in some of the older ones, but it's like in this one, a buddy will drop down somewhere on the board, and like usually in the last ones, it's like you'd get a buddy and like whoever like landed on the space got the buddy. Here, it's like you go past the buddy and then everyone plays a buddy mini game, and whoever wins the buddy mini game gets the buddy. But if you pass the person who has the buddy, you steal the buddy from them. And like the buddy games can take a really long time. So it's like, I don't know. There's a lot of stuff going on.
That sounds like in practice, I would lose interest even more quickly than I did just hearing you trying to describe it. Because...
Yeah. No, I mean, whenever we play, I'm like, Richard, you need to turn the game speed up to fast because I can't. When you're playing, like, there's like a mall level, which has tons of like, you know, there's a bunch of stores and stuff in it. So there's like a lot of like events on the board where it's like someone lands somewhere and then they have to do something or like do something with a menu or there's another shop and there's so many lucky spaces where it's like a little, cause they want, you know, everyone's turn to have, they don't want them to just land on a plain red or blue space. You want something exciting to happen on your turn and you're getting stamps and stuff like that. And it's just like, man, you could maybe scale some of this back a little bit.
Yeah. That just makes everyone's turn take way too long. You want the turns to be breezy so that you can get to the mini game so that everyone can participate.
Yes. Yeah. So, but sometimes there's just like too much going on or it's like, okay, we're going to play a buddy game. And then it's like, oh, someone landed on like a versus space. So there's going to be another mini game here. And it's just like, my God, that was one turn. That's like insane. Come on now.
I'm glad to know that we wound up with the good one because it really is giving me a lot of like happy nostalgic memories for that the original N64 trilogy of games specifically with the maps and the games that return from those three as a greatest hits. It feels pretty this is just Mario Party. This is a down a bit, you know, if you want some bog standard Mario Party, that's what it is. So I guess Superstars is the good one. That's good to know.
I think Superstars is the best one that's available on Switch at this time if you're looking to get into that shit. All right, that's all the games I played.
Woo, man.
All right, TV or movies? All right,
I got a couple.
TV quick.
Yeah.
Oh, what you got, Dave?
Well, did you watch anybody watch James Gunn's Creature Commandos?
No, not yet. I've heard it's great. I really want to, but I have not.
All right. It's a lot of fun. It's great. It's good fun. His brother voices a Nazi killing robot.
I was gonna say there's a Nazi killing robot.
It's great voice cast. Wonderful voice cast. Some surprisingly very surprisingly for what I thought was just going to be like a light, fun, action-y, comic book-y story. Some story beats that have just really stuck in my brain that I can't stop thinking about.
Cool.
Yeah. So just really, surprisingly impressive stuff.
The James Gunn thing, I'm scared because a lot of the stuff he's been making is like, you know, it's a bunch of people who shouldn't go together, but do in a superhero world with emotional resonance. But also, I like all of those, all of the ones that he's made.
Yeah.
And I really like the Superman trailer. So I'm just like, good. Good for that guy. I still think back to James Gunn being on Kumail and Emily Gordon's podcast talking about Lollipop Chainsaw, so it's fun to see that road at this point. But
it is I was surprised to know how much it is just his, like every episode he is the credited writer on, and he is in the credits too, like in the animated credits of each of the characters. It always ends with a little animated James Gunn at a typewriter, like written by James Gunn. He wrote every episode. Like, this is completely his brainchild, and so it feels very auteur-y.
Ooh, no, I'm excited too. That's another one of those without Max, if I had Max, sort of things. But I've got two. I finally got into Lower Decks, weirdly enough. The first season never like there was episodes I liked, but now that I'm in the second season, in true Star Trek fashion, it almost feels planned for a Trek parody show. But Second season starts, and I'm like, oh, this is why people really love this show. Yeah. So
I'm still halfway through season one, knowing full well that it gets better. But it's just season one is it's not that it's a slog. It's good. It's fine. It's just sort of a little mediocre. All the pieces are there.
No, what I did when Strange New Worlds did the crossover episode, I went, okay, and I looked up a list of, like, the best Lower Decks episodes and picked, like, a couple from, like, the first and second season. And that was, like, the best, like, okay, I know that this is going to get good, or it has the possibility thereof.
Yeah.
But, yeah, as I said, this was, like, the first time that I was, like, motivated to, like, go back. And also, like, because I know that they're... I haven't even seen a screenshot, but I know they interact in some way with the 70s cartoon because, I mean, like, they reference everything. But, I fucking love that 70s cartoon, so I'm excited for that.
No, I can't wait to see all, like, just the calcivate of previous characters from prior series that come back to guest star on the show. Like, no, everyone. Everyone that's still alive.
Truly, yeah. They did some stuff with Jonathan Frakes that I did not expect. That was very funny. And the only other TV thing I had, Apple had that free weekend, and I'm like, I'll watch this, I'll watch that. And I watched all of Schmigadoon. That is what I did.
Yeah?
And it's really good. Well,
shit.
The thing is...
Fuck, damn it. It's not what I want to hear.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Well, especially the second season. Like, the first season is very good, but if you have limited time, like, just the second season is Chicago for the most part. Okay. But it's Chicago plus more in that vein. Like, it's got some Sweeney Todd mix in, and it's... And if they were going to do a third season, it was going to be specifically Sondheim focused. And after watching those two seasons, I'm actually like, well, it was going to be Sondheim focus. And also, it was going to have like a song from Dick Tracy. It was going to have like, you know, like there were like two or three that I'm just like, motherfucker. But, no, it's really, really clever. Like I've listened to, Julie Klausner and, Tom Sharpling's podcast Double Threat for a long time since the beginning, I guess at this point, but, Julie writes for the show, and the cast is just very, very good. But like the music is catchy, and that's the thing, is like when it's done in a parody, and you know, like I'm the same way, where like it's hard for me to like musical theater unless it's genre, like if it's horror or comedy, like I've got a good foothold. Sort of thing, and it kind of falls into that, where there were a couple songs that just like stuck in my head. Yeah. So much so that I finally watched I never saw Into the Woods, and I watched the 1991 production of that, because that's supposed to be great. That's fucking great. But you know, like I was so set to watch like For All Mankind. I'm like, I'm gonna get back to For All Mankind. That show's supposed to be tremendous. But yeah, it was it, and also it, I can't think of that did Barry Sonnenfeld. It's, I was also in the mood for a Barry Sonnenfeld that did Addams Family, Men in Black, Pushing Daisies.
What did he do on Apple TV? What's
Schmigadoon?
Oh, really?
So that's he's also shot that, and he started out as I don't remember if it's. I think he definitely directed a good deal. Like it is a Barry Sonnenfeld production. Mm. So like it looks like Pushing Daisies, and it has Kristen Chenoweth. So like, and they didn't do any Pushing Daisies jokes, which is odd, but especially, you know, given things, I was looking for something that was like sweet in that Barry Sonnenfeld, like suck you in kind of escapism. So it's perfect for that if you
got
the option.
I have never enjoyed a serialized TV musical theater focused series, because they are all, they always mm-hmm. just feel way too wink and naughty to me.
Yeah.
But
I think one thing that helps is Keegan-Michael Key in the first season is your character who does not like musicals. So like that is kind of your, like, he is voicing like how we feel about it. It's not even just like a musical theater person trying to write somebody who doesn't, you know, that it feels honest. All right. At least.
Okay.
Enough so. And again, like I would say if you're on the fence, skip to the second season, but I enjoyed the first season too.
Yeah, no, this sounds like something, well, especially if Kristen Chenoweth is in it, because my kids are now fully obsessed with Wicked. I think if I could get them on board, if we could all watch Schmigadoon together and enjoy it, that might be a good thing to do.
Well, it's not only, it's her and Alan, I can't think of his
name. Alan Cumming?
Her and Alan Cumming doing Sweeney Todd stuff in the second season. Oh, so, geez. Like...
Yeah.
Just murdering orphans. that's what I got for TV, and I guess I'll swing into movies, especially give the clock. But there's a new Wallace and Gromit.
It's gotta watch
new
that.
Wallace and Gromit. It's great. And rewatched the three shorts before it to get in the mood, and the wrong trousers is just fucking one of the best. It's the best. You can't beat it. But I was just happy that they were able to do this well with it, given, like, you know, this is the first one with a new voice actor for Wallace, you know, and it's the first time they've done, like, well, I guess Chicken Run had a sequel as well, but a direct sequel for Wallace and Gromit is such an interesting kind of mode. Was it a little long? I, like, in a narrative sense, yes, but because I love looking at it, I don't care. You know, like, it's a warm blanket. That's what Aardman does.
Yeah.
So, like, it succeeded. It's not, I think Were-Rabbit is better personally, like, in the first Chicken Run. Second Chicken Run was good, but I think this was better than that. Like, you can definitely tell that they were putting their heart into it after, like, the fires of the voice actor and all that stuff. So, so it's good, and it's sitting right there on Netflix. Other, like, feature flick I got is I saw the Nosferatu, of course.
Ah, yes.
Yes, that definitely would have made it into the top 10 at that point. That movie's great. But it's neat. I don't know if either of you guys saw Shadow of the Vampire.
I did
years ago.
Like, yeah, 20 years ago I saw it. I haven't seen it since.
I really like that movie, but it was really cool to see Dafoe go from literally Nosferatu to Van Helsing, basically.
Like
playing the other end of it. he's Van Helsing, and he's also the comic relief. It's super interesting. Like, it's such a perfect, like, he's hunting, but he's only so effective, sort of thing. But beyond that, you know, it's they wanted to get past the, like, the CW version of Dracula, if you will, you know, like the Anne Rice romance side. Like, they're still fucking, but that's the thing, is like, people are like, this movie's sexy and it's so much I'm like, it's not sexy. Like, there's sex, but it's perfect and, like, on purpose, not sexy. Like, it's the biggest compliment I've given this is, like, it's the only time that I've seen, like, I've thought Dracula sleeping in a coffin is gross. I was just like, oh, right, that's a gross thing. Like, I never thought about it, but I'm just like, yeah, we never think about that. That's sort of thing. But,
yeah, it's funny how everything I see about this movie is how horny it is. I guess the movie's not horny. Yeah. People are just horny for it.
People are just horny.
Yeah. No, there was Yeah, people are just no. People are lonely. there was an article I didn't get to read because it's behind a paywall, but it's, you know, sex versus sensual. Like it's got sex, but it is not a sensual movie. So,
that's a good distinction.
But gorgeous, yeah. Like there's a lot of like on the filmmaking side that's just like gorgeous to see. Like a lot of it, or I think all of it, is like lit in frame with like candle lights and like just the shadows and the darks, and like there's a couple of shots that are just amazing. And also like I don't like Skarsgård as Pennywise, but I really liked him as Orlok. Like this felt much like scarier, and he's just, I don't know, like it's a better match of a character.
Okay.
Too, sort of thing.
I really want to see it. Now, you haven't also seen the Doug Jones as Orlok Nosferatu, have you?
No.
That Which also came that out within the past few months.
The not the Renfield one.
No, it is another movie called Nosferatu. It is with Doug Jones as Orlok. A competing film.
Wow, I missed that.
With the same premise. I think most people missed it.
When you say competing, movie.
I mean, you know, I follow Doug Jones on social media, so like he talked about it a lot, and so I was like, oh, oh my God, our awards are based on it, the Prestige and the other one, the Edward Norton. Paul Giamatti movie situation.
Oh, yeah.
Where the same movie is coming out at the same time. And clearly one of these is one.
I don't see it on his IMDb.
I don't know.
Are you sure it wasn't What We Do in the Shadows that he showed up in? I mean, like, he's on that show.
No, I swear there was a whole other Nosferatu movie with Doug Jones playing Orlok.
It was in 2023. IMDb.
Oh, it's under 23. There it is.
Symphony of Horror as Count Orlok.
Well, that could be because
did it release this month?
Festival. Okay. It could have been festivals and shit. Like that's there were a couple like movies from 22. Like Hundreds of Beavers came out in 2022.
Right.
But yeah, exactly. One of those. Wow. Yeah. Sorry, Doug Jones. I didn't even know about this one.
Oh, yeah, there it is. Nosferatu 2023. Count Orlok. Yep.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, only other. No, that movie, you know, not really for the kids, but I'm curious what you'll. Like, this is the only movie I've seen Lily Rose Depp in, and I thought she did quite well. I'm curious. At least, like, she has one scene that, like, you know, people pretty undeniable, like this is a good scene, but I'm curious how you'll feel on like the performance on a whole sort of thing.
People there's generally agree that she's one of the good Nepo babies. So
yes, you're right. And the only other thing like on the, in the movie vein with like, David Lynch dying and all that stuff, I definitely have gone down tons of rabbit holes, and I was lucky enough to, one of our theaters was just playing Twin Peaks, and if you wanted to like throw some bucks at them, you could throw some bucks at them. So I watched like the first three episodes.
Ah, it's great.
It's so good. Like Lynch gets like he's one of the few people, because he had a sense of humor, that gets to do the artful stuff without coming off pretentious, because he's just like he's the earnest aw shucks guy, and also the weirdest brain that's ever made stuff, but also genuinely knows what's funny about it and isn't up his own ass about it.
Yeah.
It's fascinating. Still going through a lot of that stuff, but it's always been there. It's like, especially with us talking about video games, like it's so intertwined in like a lot of, you know, like you're not having Alan Wake without Twin Peaks, without Lynch, you know, Root Zero, etc. Those are the obvious ones, and then beyond that, it's just like it's so part of culture at this point.
Yeah. What occurs to me, there's so much of his filmic output that I've I love Twin Peaks, but I've never actually seen Mulholland Drive. You know, like at the time and that escapes me, I never went back to see it. So that I'm curating a list now of things I need to go back to.
Like for, and I still have like huge gaps too on that one. Like I need to see Lost Highway and there was an, I always forget the one that's in like 2004 or 2005, but, yeah, Mulholland Drive is, it's super cool, but it's not one of my favorites, weirdly enough. But I think I love the stories around it and the things about it, but, I saw Blue Velvet very young and that one, like, which, you know, shouldn't have, but is, like, arguably one of his best.
Yeah.
Like, that was kind of the defining one for a long time. And also, I think I mentioned I watched that recut of Dune in the last, like, 2 or 3 months.
Oh, yeah.
And that with the fan edit, is amazing. Like Lynch hated that movie. It was the only blockbuster he ever did, but... but he met Kyle MacLachlan, so... But yeah, that's what I got on those sides. I don't know if you guys got anything on the watch side.
Tim, you got anything?
Yeah, I watched War of the Rohirrim.
Oh, yeah.
War of them.
How'd you feel about that one?
Yeah, I really liked it. I enjoyed it quite a bit.
That's where I'm at. I've had some discussions with people that didn't feel as enthusiastically.
I don't know. Do you have to, if it's just, they just not detach themselves from the Peter Jackson trilogy or.
No, I think, I mean, or... like part of it was the animation isn't, you know, like there's part of me that does wish it looked a little
smoother.
I don't know if better is the right word, but just had more of a budget, I guess.
All right.
But I don't know. I was into it, so I'm glad you were.
I think it does its job. I guess I took it more of a style choice than a, you know, it felt older, like an older animated movie. Like everything, you know. I'm trying to think when the last time I saw something like a two-dimensional non-Dragon Ball Z movie in the theater was, you know, like...
Well, it did. It reminded me of like cutscenes from like Lunar or like even that Record of Lotus War anime. You know when that came out. You know, stuff like that. Early 2000s, late 90s. Yeah,
kind of a classic feel to it. But yeah, I like the story of it. And how it tied into kind of the broader saga. Yeah, I thought I really liked it. I also saw Sonic the Hedgehog 3, which I think is my least favorite of the Sonic the Hedgehog movies.
Wow.
None of which I like.
Well, yeah, but I just hear so many people saying like, yeah, 1 and 2 and you got to see 3. Like,
okay. All right.
That's got a lot of sentiment. Yeah.
I don't know if, so I think here's what the deal is for me. Well, there might be two deals. Like one, I mean, so, you know, this is Shadow the Hedgehog is in this, you know, Live and Learn is in this. So it's like, when
I've heard that too,
when Live and Learn plays and like shit start getting fucked up, that is very cool. That is awesome. I think my problem is that like one of the main shticks of the movie is that, you know, Jim Carrey is in it twice. He's playing Robotnik and Robotnik's grandfather. And I didn't care for that whole shtick.
That's
very much
totally
at all. So it's like, if you are entertained and amused by that, and I'm not saying Jim Carrey's doing a bad job. I just didn't care for that bit. But that's like a lot of like kind of where the humor of the movie rests on, I feel like, with his antics. And I was just like, I'm not really into this so much.
I haven't seen it yet, but that is what I see people reposting online all the time. And it's starting to feel very much like Mike Myers playing too many roles in the third Austin Powers movie. That's sort of the impression that that's what it's giving to me.
I mean, he's only playing two roles, but I'm just like, I don't know.
It's... And yet.
Yeah, I thought he was great in the first two.
Yeah.
I think just the second one hit more of a sweet spot for me in terms of the humor and his antics. and the stuff. And this one was more like, oh, okay, we're doing kind of this, some of the stuff again. And there's two Jim Carreys and I don't love it. So yeah.
No, that like, could wear on me pretty quick.
Yeah. If you've seen like, I don't know if you've seen GIFs of like, you know, them doing the synchronized dance through the lasers. And I'm like, boy, this is just going on. Okay. And so, yeah, I just wasn't into that.
And mentioning Gold Member is probably an apt comparison now that you mentioned it.
Yeah. I mean, it's better than Gold Member, but
yes.
Yeah, you know.
Just in terms of the shamelessness of let's let our rubber faced comic star just ham it up for probably way too long.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like maybe leaning into that a little too much.
So that
is one man's opinion. Yeah, some people seem that is their favorite one, but yeah, that's what I watched. I mean, I've watched like half of Agatha All Along now. I guess I'll wait until I'm done to talk about it.
I'll keep watching it.
Because I'm also halfway done,
and I kind of bailed because I was like, I'm not really feeling it, but I'll stick with it if you're
I dropped.
I was like kind of doing like all right with it, and then they got to the episode where they're like, okay, well, now we're going to do a flashback and explain and contextualize something, and I'm like, God damn it, why do you always do this?
I think I did make it that far. Well, because it's so frustrating, but it's specifically they're saying like, well, people are watching while they're washing dishes, so you need to explain it. Like, there's literally memorandums that like Netflix will send out or like all the streamers, because that's like a lot of fights with creative people that don't want to do that.
Yeah. Cause, you know, when I'm watching something, I'm watching something, which is why I don't watch things very much, because it's just feels rare that I can focus in my attention so acutely. Yeah. I mean, like, I was kind of enjoying like, you know, the whole cast interacting up to that point and some of the stuff they were doing. But I think that was the last episode we watched. Maybe we watched one after it. I'm not sure. So We'll see. We're going to finish it for sure.
No, I did like the cast. I mean, like, it felt like the cast was fighting the script from what I remember. Really?
Yeah.
Or fighting the Marvel-ness of it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
However, yeah. I was not into that Daredevil trailer. I don't know how you felt about that.
You know, I haven't watched the last, like, couple I watched, like, half a season two of Daredevil.
Yeah.
And so that means I have like a season and a half of that show that I didn't watch. So it's like, I still have really, I think of the first season, I'm like, man, that was awesome. But there's a lot of that show that I didn't watch. So I'm kind of like, maybe I should. Yeah.
Same. I don't think I watched the third season. I watched Jessica Jones.
I watched Jessica Jones.
One season. And
some of Luke Cage. I didn't watch any of Iron Fist. I didn't watch any of Defenders.
Same.
Or the Punisher. Punisher had a show, right?
Oh my God! Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's been a lot of Marvel.
Well,
what I was getting from, and I don't even know if I saw the transition, but like what Kingpin has become versus like what Kingpin was in that first season of Daredevil, which is like, you know what I mean? Like that feels like a totally different character. Like that table scene. In the trailer, I'm just
did you see Hawkeye?
That was the one, right?
Yeah, he shows up kind of at the end of that, yeah.
Did I watch all? I did watch all of it, right, and I was not happy with he was just very weak for being Kingpin, I felt. Mm-hmm.
You know, he had a very strong portrayal in that first season.
He did, that is a good way to put it too, because maybe they just nailed it that first season and could never really get back there again. I don't know. Drop in and out of the Marvels.
I am interested in seeing Thunderbolts. I mean, obviously I really like that Thunderbolts in comics form. I generally like the idea of taking characters that suck and throwing them together, like you know,
but James Gunn isn't doing it.
He's not doing it. No, he is not. But I am interested in that one. I think Brave New World might be a disaster, but we'll see.
I know. For a while there, I was hopeful that I was just like, well, this feels so different. It almost feels like a direct-to-video like actioner, and that's kind of interesting for a Captain America movie, but also... Mm-hmm. I don't. Yeah, it doesn't feel like it's doing it on purpose. I don't know.
No. Yeah.
Yeah.
Marvel continues to be in a dicey spot.
Yeah.
I feel like, and
it's. Yeah, I'm curious what'll happen with Fantastic Four, and I forget what else. What's the other one coming? But Fantastic Four was supposed to be like visually interesting, and that's kind of what I want to see.
Because that's a period piece.
Because it's a period piece.
Yeah.
Period pieces work. That first Captain America was very good.
Yep. Still my favorite Captain America.
Yeah.
Yeah.
David, did you see anything else?
Yeah, I got two things.
Oh, you saw Wicked.
I saw Wicked. So, okay.
Buckle up.
Yeah,
buckle up. Here he goes.
All right. Back to...
You can spoil the shit out of this. I don't care.
I mean, you know, it's a 20-year-old musical. So,
yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's a 20-year-old musical. Wicked's fucking good. It's God damn it, it's good.
Really?
Yeah, it was really good.
That you felt that way.
Yes, I was shocked. No one was more shocked than me. You know, once again, given my proclivity to just generally not like musicals.
Well, yeah, that plus the filmmaking side, because most people that are down on it are just like, the filmmaking is not good, per se.
The filmmaking didn't particularly strike me as bad, and I'm led to understand they actually used a lot of practical effects, which surprised me for being so, like, I think there's a lot of set building instead of in lieu of digital, like augmented digitally, but there's a lot of practical stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Which impressed me.
Good on them.
Yeah. It's a phenomenal cast. Almost universally, Michelle Yeoh is unfortunately cast because she can't sing, and it's painfully obvious that she can't sing. She is the Russell Crowe of this movie, the Russell Crowe to the Les Miserables in this movie.
Yes, yes.
I'm assuming she's going to fight in the second movie. I'm assuming there's a reason she's there. But Ariana Grande, I am very familiar with her acting work because she was on a Disney Channel show that my kids both love, and she's terrible in it. Like, just actively off the worst part of that show. Like, so bad that Jeanette McCurdy wrote a whole book about it. Not about that specifically, but it's a large swath of her autobiography. I'm Glad My Mother Is Dead. She was Ariana Grande's co-star.
I didn't know that was the same.
Yes. This is the show. And while she doesn't throw Ariana Grande under the bus necessarily, she complains a bit about Ariana's rising stardom and how that affected production. But Ariana Grande was a terrible actor at this point, or maybe she was told to do something that wasn't working. Either way, she's marvelous in this. She really gets a chance to demonstrate that she has a masterful vocal range outside of pop. She is really capable of singing in all styles and genre. Like, I knew that she was a vocal mimic. I knew that she's really good at doing vocal impressions thanks to her many comedy and talk show appearances, but she is wonderful in this. Cynthia Aviro is wonderful in this. They're all wonderful in this. Really, like, the cast is great. It is, the music is catchy as hell, and the story is really good. it's a really good prequel story. It is really good at taking what you know and recontextualizing it. Even though you think you know how this is going to go, it all feels very easy, but it goes to really unexpected places with really strong emotional beats that are really, really earned. I was just completely taken by surprise by this because it's always been one of my theater blind spots. Wicked is a musical that all my theater friends have always loved to the point where it kind of annoyed me and I actively avoided it because I'm like, yeah, Wicked. I know. I'm sure it's great. Yep. And I've been completely proven wrong because it really does deserve all the praise that it's gotten over the past 20 years. It really is that good. God damn it. So, yeah. That and the only other thing I want to mention here at the 11th hour is another callback to some of our points about Netflix and their ruthlessness, is that Castlevania Nocturne has returned to Netflix.
Oh, yes.
It came back about a week ago, and it is, God, just as fucking good as that series has always been. It's wonderful. It's phenomenal. And I don't know this for sure, but the way the creators of the show talk about it on social media, it sure sounds like they could use your help watching it in a timely manner so that Netflix sees that it is getting a lot of views right out the gate early in its run. Mm-hmm. Like, so if anyone is interested in watching it,
I gotta catch up, call to action, prioritize
it, because it sounds like they need it. It sounds like they need to prove to Netflix that it is getting lots of views in order to get renewed, and they deserve to.
I mean, it's hard for animation in general. You have to just do the best. You have to be the best.
Yep. Yeah. It's wonderful.
No, so that's
if you can prioritize your viewing to demonstrate to their overlords at Netflix that they deserve to be renewed, I encourage anyone to do so.
I will finish watching the original series and then watch Nocturne.
All right. So that's what I got. And
cool.
Yeah, it is cool.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. Well,
and with that.
Really?
That's it.
I did read a book.
What? What's that?
Yeah. No, I read Jason Schreier's Play Nice, his book about Blizzard Entertainment.
Oh, cool.
Which was, you know, great and depressing because I, you know, used to love Blizzard about 10 years ago. You know, they were like Nintendo status, could do no wrong. And, you know, I don't think it's a secret what happened to Blizzard is that they got bought by Activision. And then they just kept getting squeezed and squeezed and squeezed until now the two are just indiscernible from one another. And Blizzard is just another part of Activision that needs to churn out content in a timely fashion to make numbers go up. But, you know, still just like reading all of that in exquisite detail was, you know, infuriating and in such a bummer.
Yes.
But it's, you know, it's exactly what you think. I mean, it's basically like, you know, Activision bought Blizzard, I want to say either right before, right around, oh no, World of Warcraft was like already going at the time.
Yes.
And they like bought it from Vivendi.
Around two.
And what's that?
Around like Warcraft 2. World of Warcraft, not Warcraft.
Yeah, World of Warcraft. So it's like already, you know, World of Warcraft, and World of Warcraft also like fucked up Blizzard like unto itself because suddenly they had most of their employees were dedicated to making Warcraft and supporting Warcraft, not just like developing the game, but suddenly you have to have like server technicians and customer service people. And like, there's so much that goes into just the business of running the largest MMO on the planet that like that became such a huge focus. And that, which is probably why not much came out between, you know, it for like 8 years out of Blizzard other than Warcraft stuff before StarCraft 2 finally hit, which had its own problems with them trying to get it like off the ground in Korea or whatever. But yeah. And then it was basically like, you know, the sequel, what was supposed to be the sequel to World of Warcraft got canceled, which was called Project Titan. And like, that was like kind of one of the big pivot points when Bobby Kotick started to be like, this is not acceptable. You cannot pour years of work and millions of dollars into a project and just cancel it and have it not make any money. And that's like, you know, more control kept coming in. We're going to, you know, putting more Activision minded executives in place at Blizzard that were, you know, doing weird human resourcey things to like, you know, rate employees and making sure they're coming to office, you know, and shit like that. And then, you know, Overwatch is a big hit. Well, it's like, we need to turn Overwatch into something that makes money way faster. We need a sequel to Overwatch. You know, we can't just have an Overwatch League that's its like own fun little esports thing. No, Bobby Kotick needs to turn it into something where his billionaire friends can put millions of dollars into it and get millions of dollars back. We need to try to go down that road. And then the whole thing becomes like, it just breaks down. But yeah, it's just like the soul of Blizzard, you know, has long left the company at this point. But it's a great book. I borrowed it from my local library.
I'm sure it's incredibly insightful about what that is like at the AAA publisher, you know, the experience of, what a great and heartbreaking account.
They go from being, you know, these guys who made these hit games in the 90s and had it all and, like, just, you know, just wanted to keep making these stellar games, but just, like, the, you know, they had to be owned by so I reading the book, I kind of can't believe that they never, like, look to just be completely independent. Like, they were always owned by somebody, which is just seems weird for the amount of money that was being tossed around there. But yeah, it's definitely his most, like, his previous two books kind of jumped around. Each chapter would be about, like, a different game, but this is his first book that is just like, this is one developer, it is one story from one end to the other. So worth checking out, I think. You know, I mean, you can't not be somewhat familiar with what Blizzard has done in the past 30 years.
Yeah.
So
I mean, you should have stopped right after Rock and Roll Racing. We all know that.
That's really, they overreached past that.
Yeah.
That was just a contract job.
Yeah, I figure.
I know that we're well past time, but we never got to do a Transformers minute at the start of the show. And here's the thing.
Oh boy, there he goes.
I know that masterpiece figures don't scale well with the modern line, but I was unprepared for just how ridiculously enormous.
Oh boy.
All right, so here's Masterpiece Jetfire. And he is 14 inches tall. So he's the size of, like, an American Girl doll. I could dress him up and put him in.
Yeah. Hey, Jetfire's big.
Jetfire's big. He is, I mean, he is just been, he is so much bigger even than, like, the Dinobots, like Grimlock. He's just...
He's holding up Generation 2 Grimlock there in dinosaur form.
I'm holding up here's Studio Series Optimus Prime, who himself is a large boy.
They
don't scale is the thing. I mean, I am still after, you know, someday I would still like to get a Siege Jetfire. This one just happened. I happened to spot him on shopgoodwill.com and got him for a great price. I haven't even attempted to transform him yet, but he's just ridiculously, stupidly huge. So I just wanted to show him. That's all. All right, Transformers.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That was worth showing.
Is that I have a bunch of these much smaller, like these blockies.
Oh, yeah, those little guys.
These little buildable figures.
He's adorable.
Yeah, Ultra Magnus is a good one.
I love him.
I got a ton of them as kind of like a panic purchase after the early November for no particular reason. But yeah,
what
I got
those,
yeah,
like 25 a pop?
No, these, well, so my local shop had them. My local toy store had them for 10.
Oh, really?
Which I thought was, 10 bucks.
Oh,
which I thought was a great price because it's like, so it comes in pieces. It all comes in pieces in the bag. Yeah. It's about a 4-inch tall figure. So, you know, you do have the fun of putting something together, and then they have this nice little kind of like blocky, boxy,
exaggerated proportions
look to them.
Yeah.
Yeah. A little bit of exaggerated proportions. There's your boy Megatron. Yeah.
Well, 10 bucks is much more reasonable than I thought they were.
Oh, absolutely. Well, the thing is, like, not that I would do this, but, you know, if you buy a whole box of them, like, the boxes, I want to say, are like 70 bucks, something like that, maybe even a little bit less. So then you're getting from them, and each box has one of each figure in it.
Oh.
So if you look at them and you're, that's how they're seated.
Well, that's the way.
The only difference. Yeah, the only difference is that there are some that there's secret rare figures, which I got the secret Optimus Prime.
Oh, no.
So in a box, you'll either get the regular Optimus Prime or it's the secret rare Optimus Prime. And the other eight figures are the other eight figures from the series. So the
there's nine
secret
in
rare
a box for 70.
There's nine in a box for 70, something like that. Whatever. I bought them directly from Blockies from their website.
Okay.
Yeah, I have some extras, Dave, so I could definitely not extra. Well, yeah, no, I think I have a couple extra Constructicons. There's a couple other ones that I was like, I don't know if I need Grapple in my collection. you know, and there's some other, they're like each series has like a weird Optimus Prime to it. That I just want regular Optimus Prime. Grimlock looks really good, but yeah. So like if you get a, you know, if you buy a box of nine, you're getting one of each figure, and the, you know, one of them might be the secret rare, like one in every four boxes has the secret rare one. So it's like, if you look at a series and you're like, man, I would like all of the figures in that series, just buy the box. Or if you want, like, if you want most of them, you know, yeah, just buy the box and find some other friends who like Transformers and give them Grapple.
Yeah.
yeah. Or something like that. Yeah. I got, oh, now they're all falling over. Yeah. Shockwaves down there. I got,
oh, man.
Seeker Jets, you know, Starscream comes with that. Oh, and yeah. See, like, yeah, all the Dinobots look good. Oh, yeah. And they have some
rabbit
like
hole
some,
to fall down.
Yeah. Well, you know, down. I love ooh, little blind box figures. Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, like, the Dinobots have Dino form.
Oh, I didn't know there were Dino forms.
Yeah, there's Dino forms.
Oh, man.
So yeah, when I was at MAGFest, there was a guy at Transformers table, and he was selling these for like, I want to say like $16 each, something like that. He was definitely digging in there. Hey, you gotta do what you gotta do to make your paper. I'm not judging, but I am also saying that I got them for half that.
Yeah, no, I feel like I've seen them.
You
for
got
20
to see the markup. Yeah,
right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But I mean, yeah, like my local toy shop had them for 10, which I thought was, you know, totally fine.
Yeah, yeah, mm-hmm. It's much more reasonable. Yeah. I saw them for 20 at like the FYE at the mall.
I would believe that. Yeah.
Well, it's like still they're still in. Operate FYE.
Yes,
they kind of came back.
Yeah.
Oh wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. They mostly sell like tchotchkes, pop culture tchotchkes, anime stuff, and vinyl.
Gotcha.
That's what you can get in FYE.
Yeah. No, actually, I was shortly after I got you know, my I think it might have actually been like the same day I got like my first couple of these from my local toy store. I was like. In Target and in kind of the back where they have like their more adult toy section.
Yeah, yeah.
Like anime figures and horror figures and stuff. They had some like little Transformers blind boxes and I was looking at it and they were selling them for like $16 and it was like a solid piece that looked like it didn't move. I'm like, this looks like a piece of shit compared to this, the other ones that I just bought. Cause like, you know, they articulate, like they move.
They do?
Right. Yeah. Oh yeah. Arms move. Yeah. Like their elbows move, shoulder move. Knees, legs, like feet move. Like they actually come with bases, so it's easier to pose them.
Oh, jeez.
I just kind of don't have them out because of the amount of space that's on my desk here. I gotta find a different place for like some of these guys. My charging cable
tempted me to drop too much money on this now, Tim.
Not too much. You just get yourself a box, man. In fact, I think I got. Yo, we'll talk. Just get yourself one box, man. Maybe two. It's up to you. You know what? I have, I think, an extra Mixmaster in Long Haul, I want to say.
Yeah.
I think I have an extra Mixmaster in Long Haul. So, you can see what you think about it. You know, I'll have to go through, see what I got that I didn't want to build. I think Red Alert's down there, Cliff Jumper.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely a couple Constructicons, because that's what I got. I actually, yeah, so they're
slightly
cool.
Deeper G1 cuts than I would have expected, but that's great.
Yeah, they're doing, there's another series they do that they're a little fancier. I think they have little LED lights on them. Those are a little more expensive.
Oh dear.
And there's some they're doing now that I saw a series where they have some of them that are in like, or some of the other, characters are in like car mode, though they can't transform back and forth, but they do have them in car mode. And I'm kind of like, I don't really need that in my life. And they have bigger ones. They have a bunch of stuff going on over there at the old Blockies, but.
Oh, geez. All right. Time to educate myself. Better leave a window open.
Go down there, Rebel. But hey, let's finish up this podcast.
Yeah.
Thank you all for listening.
Yes.
And we'll catch you all next month. here on The Fat Gatsby.
Hey, bye-bye.
We'll do it. Bye.